Alrighty, I will call the meeting to order. It's good to see everybody. It's been a long time. Yeah, this is like, I almost forgot what it was like to sit here. So no, it's good. I'm glad everybody's doing well. It's good to see you without masks on too. So, all right. Well, with that said, I will ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
Motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
All right, carried. So we will get right into our guest speaker this evening. I'd like to welcome Steve Kelly, CEO of Ellenville Regional Hospital. We have Debbie Briggs and Madison, what did your...
Madison Freeman.
Freeman, okay. Well, welcome. You guys want to discuss transitional proposal, and with that said, the floor is yours.
All right, well, thank you very much. So, appreciate the opportunity. We have been doing a lot of work. I'm Steve Kelly, president of a regional hospital. Make it easy for your minutes.
Thank you.
And I'm joined here by Debbie Briggs, our vice president and chief human resources officer, and Madison Freeman, who works in our population manager in our population health department. We've done a lot of work in population health over the last few years, particularly in the areas of diet, exercise, and risk reduction. Risk reduction is a lot of our opiate work, which has been, you know, we've been doing that for a long time, been pretty successful with that. We're now doing a lot of work and working on cardiac health, around nutrition, helping people to learn to eat properly. And our goal is to be able to do some movement in health outcomes by metrics that were that are publicly reported by the county. And we have a rural health network that's our vehicle for doing that, which is a joint venture, basically a rural health network with the Institute for Family Health, Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health, and the hospital. And then we partner with lots of other groups to be able to affect that. And so I think over time we'll be able to move some of those metrics. We had COVID, which came in the middle of it, which sort of set us back a bit, but we're really out there again rebuilding, and I think we'll be making a difference again. I mean, last year the death rate came back, but through our work, there was a significant reduction before COVID in 2019. I think it was like 40% reduction in deaths, so I think we contributed a lot to that. One of the things that we have not been able to really address, the social determinants of healthcare, and those are things like food insecurity and housing insecurity, job insecurity, all these insecurities that really, when you come down to it, are kind of economic insecurities. If people have enough money, they can afford to eat properly, they can afford to have housing, and they can afford to take care of themselves. And so what we're proposing is a true program to address the social determinants of healthcare by helping families through education and partnership, our partnership with Ulster County again, through Ulster County Community College, to do a bracket shift where people would be able to double their income. So if we took somebody from $15 an hour to $30 an hour, their whole lifestyle would change, their ability to take care of themselves will change, and their health will improve, because the social determinants is probably the greatest predictor of health. So people who do not make very much money have worse health than people that make more money. And so that's sort of, in a nutshell, what we're doing. We have looked through the literature. There has been programs like this that have been sponsored by governments in the past that have not been very successful. And we believe the reason that they haven't been successful is because they have lacked a coaching component. There is a group that's doing, you know, basically the same kind of thing in Westchester right now that's having really good results. We've met with them, we've talked with them, They've given us some guidance that I think will help us. I think we will continue to evolve. The situation is a little different in Ulster County as a rural county compared to Westchester, which is a very wealthy suburban county, where we are not as suburban, more rural. And so I asked Debbie to come because she has been a big part of being able to form the interface. She has a role at Ulster Community College. She's on their board, which has helped facilitate us being able to work with Dr. Roberts. And he's very excited about this, actually. He thinks this is a fantastic idea. I'm going to save the details of it for Madison to talk about because she actually wrote the grant and did a lot of the research. So I just wanted to give kind of an introduction and introduce Debbie to have a few remarks about the partnership that we've been working on.
Thank you, Steve. So yes, I am a vice president at the hospital, but my other hat is a trustee for the SUNY Ulster Board. And we really think this will be a strong collaboration with SUNY Ulster. When you hear the program, we will be a feeder into SUNY Ulster. They have both degree and certification programs that fit nicely with our project. And the nice thing is all the money will stay in the county. So I know at the hospital we have RNs that went to Sullivan, Orange, Ulster, but we'll be feeding everybody right into SUNY Ulster. So we think that's a win-win for the college, help increase the enrollment, and a win-win for the county because the money will stay here. So that we're excited about that, and Dr. Roberts is really excited about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing this kind of thing for a long time. We have people who will come and work for us as a patient care tech, PCT, and we will help them to go to school, and they will become an RN, and they will double their income kind of like that once they complete that degree and pass their boards. So this is not a new thing for us. That helps people to have a real future. Then they can subspecialize from there into OR, ER, ICU, whatever it is that they want to do. And so the concept is something we've been doing for a long time. One of the key things that our program will really specialize in is that coaching component, that success coaching. And Madison will talk about that. So let me introduce Madison Freeman.
Hi, nice to meet all of you. Madison Freeman, as Steve said, I do currently manage multiple grants on our population health department, focused primarily on chronic disease. I will say that this proposal is very near and dear. I think that it would make a tremendous impact on our community. Based on the families we currently serve, we see this as a really big need. Oftentimes, like we said, economic status is inextricably linked to income status as well. So what we're proposing here is a workforce retraining program, but what is different is that we're combining workforce retraining with intensive case management. So we want to provide a minimum of 25 families with workforce retraining through SUNY Ulster, in addition to success coaching and case management with a licensed social worker. Our proposal is for a five-year program to start. The idea is the majority of the programs that we're hoping to enroll individuals in will be less than 5 years. But what we see oftentimes in additional workforce retraining programs is lack of retention and lack of long-term success because they aren't looking at the trajectory of the individuals after the graduation. They focus a lot on retention rates in terms of graduation rates, but not employment and employability. So what we're looking to do is kind of minimize a lot of the barriers individuals face that would oftentimes set them back from actually attaining their degree and increased employability. So we're going to have individuals of families work directly with the case manager to create action plans. So they'll look at all the kind of different barriers that they're receiving that might impact their overall well-being. And we're going to address those barriers in addition to workforce training. So they enroll directly, they would work continuously with a case manager throughout the program during their education or training. And they would address barriers in terms of enrollment or application that they might face that sometimes and oftentimes with workforce training leads to people dropping out. Things like just not knowing how to address a letter, certain issues that come up that would normally cause them to drop out and loss of retention and graduation, they would be able to address with the help of the social worker. So we're going to address that. We're also going to provide them with success coaching as well as soft skills coaching. Oftentimes you see these people having things like leadership skills they need to form, communication skills, things like that that we'll be able to provide to them. And then we're going to be able to hopefully link them directly with employers after the fact. So they'll be going through the program, work directly with a case manager, and then after the fact we'll follow them to make sure that they have a long-term sustainable success. So they'll go into employment and we're hopefully going to be able to follow them after the fact as well. So that is the main proposal that we have. We believe that it would kind of break the generational cycle of generational poverty. The reason that we want to do families is because oftentimes we see a top-down approach. If you work directly with individuals and parents, you see that behaviors trickle down to the children. We see that a lot of the time in our current wellness cohort. If we improve the behaviors of the parents that we work with, we oftentimes see that the behaviors in the children change as well. So if we're going to be improving the educational attainment of the parents, we see that it's more likely that the children are going to improve their educational attainment and what they think that they can achieve long term. So we don't see this as just an individual improvement and the individual economic improvement, but we see it as more of like a community improvement as well. So we're going to break that cycle. We're going to hopefully improve their long-term health impacts as well. And by doing that, we're also influencing the health and the economy of the community. So we've seen a lot of other programs that have done similar things have a lot of significant long-term impacts in terms of local prosperity. So we see a lot of decreased rate of turnover in these employment sectors. You see a lot of improvement in the local economy, decreased reliance on social assistance. And then you're also seeing the decreased resilience of the families as well. By working with the social worker, they kind of have a toolkit that they develop that allows them to be able to work through change in the future. Again, that kind of improves their overall well-being long-term. And it also improves the community well-being long-term. We did provide a proposal, if we wanted to hand those out. Goes into a little bit more depth of the objectives that we have.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
How does this tie into the county's brighter futures and the school systems?
Thank you.
You know, when I went to school, we learned how to address envelopes and write checks and are you coordinating with the schools too?
So what our idea is initially, the first thing that we're going to do once this program gets implemented is create a steering committee. We obviously know we want to be conveners. We're not experts in everything, but we know that. We know that there are experts in every field, including the schools and brighter futures. So the idea is create a steering committee throughout Ulster County that provides insight into the program and helps us kind of refine the goals and the objectives as well as the trajectory long term. So that is one of our main components, yes.
So who are you applying for a grant to?
Currently, we've applied multiple grants. We've gotten some interest from health insurance companies to provide matching funds.
Yeah, MVP, for example, is pretty,
yeah, I see that.
Pretty, pretty generous providing matching funds, and we're trying to secure other matching funds. We're thinking that this might be something that the county would fund from the major grant that you're getting from the federal government. This is, you know, when you're looking at projects that might fund, there are some that touch a lot of people, but not that deeply, where this is one that will have a smaller spread, but will have a much greater impact for the people.
And how would you identify candidates to participate in the program?
It would be an application process, because we want to be sure that we're having people that are committed. This has been another area that has not been that successful with other folks that have done this, where they didn't get people that were committed enough or really were interested in significantly improving their future.
I was also going to add, currently SUNY Ulster does a women's entrepreneurship program where they have a significant application process that they go through income verification. It's also essay components that look at like their actual identification of barriers. Oftentimes you see, at least if they have the understanding that there are barriers in their way to achieving this, then they can identify them and work through the changes.
So are you modeling the kind of student experience around the New Start for Women program?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's a great program.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Jordan and that whole program. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I've worked with him a lot to kind of refine the program goals and everything like that.
We don't have to reinvent everything.
Absolutely.
Trying to come up with a program that can really be successful.
how many caseworkers per student slash family?
There's going to be, the idea is to hire two case managers for 25 families to begin with, and that can be readjusted as time goes on if need is increased.
Yeah, I think we'll become...
And it's a long-term relationship. I mean,
yeah, that's the idea.
That's really an interesting,
yep.
You know, long-term commitment for somebody. What's going to happen when there's turnover? Because there will be some sort of turnover. Do you have a plan for...
Well, we'll have to cross that bridge as we get to it, as any time you have turnover. Hopefully we don't have too much turnover. We don't have real tremendously high turnover in our hospital, so I mean, we have some, naturally, a certain amount, but not a huge amount.
And you said you're going to send them off to get employed. Are you hoping that they just turn around and get employed by you?
Well, I would like to be selfish and say we're only going to do this for health workers, but that really is not our plan at all.
Okay.
No, I just think that that's part of the us believing that we could do this because we've been helping other people without really as good of a support structure as this would provide.
And SUNY Ulster has great certification programs for the green, mm-hmm. the greens, yeah. and we would certainly focus on that as well. And they also, I know, because I'm on some of the committees from the hospital perspective that SUNY Ulster is on, working with, you know, a lot of the businesses and the, what's the word I'm looking for? Not the Chamber of Commerce, the Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. There's already a huge connection with SUNY Ulster, mm-hmm. so we would want to continue and tap into that for, you know, post-graduation.
Right. So we think that we think that we'll be able to help. I think we'll become more efficient, I guess would be the right word, where we should be able to handle more people than that over time. But I think that we want to have, you know, reasonable expectations mm-hmm. that, so I think it'll take a little while to get it started. I think we have to go through establishing our steering committee. We have to establish an application process. We have to make it clear in the application process that we would be focusing on occupations as opposed to study of Neanderthal basket weaving techniques or something that there's not a lot of jobs for today. I think that's really, and our goal here is to help people to be successful and employed so that they can double their income. I mean, that really is, that's what we need to do so we can really significantly change their future.
Are there any private foundations on your radar for this?
So we've worked with, when we've had discussions with MVP, they've been reaching out to private foundations for potentials. You're constantly looking for other grant opportunities.
Yeah,
as well.
They have actually been doing some work with the Dyson Foundation and some other foundations. So I think that they will help us in that regard also. So we're, you know, I think we'll be able to raise some money, but it's an expensive project. But from our standpoint, it's two social workers and the cost for them.
There's also through the CFA process for the state, there's a pay for success model that you can get funded through. I don't know if you've looked at that, but if this works, then you'll end up hitting the metrics that they lay out in that pay for success system because they're basically providing funds to have employment outcomes. And so if someone completes the classes, that would be, you know, sufficient for funding the class component of this as well. That might be another option to look at.
Thank you.
Yeah, that might be helpful. Mm-hmm. Yep. We still need to start the program though. So.
Yeah.
But we may be able to use that to grow the program once we get it up and running.
Because you guys are coming at it from a public health perspective, which I think is absolutely right. But there's a lot of organizations that are coming at it from a workforce development perspective mm-hmm. as mm-hmm. well. And like if you reached out to the REDC for this, you know, like it's Professor, President Christian from SUNY New Paltz
is the
chair of the REDC. The Regional Economic Development Council, and I think that's how those grants get awarded. So there's an economic development component of this that might pair really well.
Well, maybe I'll reach out to him. I know him.
Yeah, definitely recommend it, yeah.
And for how long are you going to follow the success of this program?
We're looking at a 5-year, you know, starting with a 5-year vision,
right,
and then see what happens. If we can perpetuate it, we would want to do that. I don't think we're going to run out of prospects in 5 years, so it's...
Yeah, definitely. Well, if your goal is to, you know, potentially change, you know, generational,
mm-hmm, yeah,
you know, poverty or health-related issues that are directly or indirectly related to, you know, finance, then I guess you have a... You can go out pretty far, mm-hmm, you know, many, many years.
Well, health and economics are really completely intertwined, so mm-hmm, it's... that's our goal, is to, we're health people, that's the direction we're coming at it from, but it also has the byproduct, if it's a byproduct, that many people would think it's a great product to have, economic development of having workers. I could tell you as an employer, it's very hard to find workers right now,
mm-hmm,
very hard, in every field, it's just unbelievable. I was talking with a local contractor who's an excavating contractor, and I figured he'd be fine. He said, oh no, it's not fine. We can't hire operators to run our machinery. Mm-hmm. Everybody is that wants to be working is really working hard now. And it just is not, our economy is really doing well. So now's the time we gotta get people trained and get them working so we can push this forward while there's lots of jobs for them to get.
Sure.
So that's our proposal. We didn't want to take a lot of your time. Hopefully, if there are any other questions, I don't want to rush anything. We have your ear this short window.
Yeah. Anybody have anything else?
No. It's really interesting.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
We very much appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. Well,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stick around for county business.
you won't be faulted for leaving now.
We appreciate it. Thank you for your leadership and commitment. It's, I'm sure, a long, looks like a long agenda ahead of you. So we don't want to make it any longer. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
There's
no
five.
Yeah.
We don't
want to
break any rules.
All the lights
are
off.
Good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
I will.
Thanks,
Trey.
All right, we will get into resolutions. We will start with resolution 331, confirming the reappointment of a member to the Ulster County Board of Health.
I'll move it.
I'll second.
All right. Discussion, this is for Stephanie Turco. It's a 7-year appointment. Are they all 7-year appointments? Really?
Not 7 years. I think it's 5. It goes
five?
Okay. Present to 2/28/26.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 5 years. All right.
I think they're all 5-year appointments.
Okay. Yeah. Still one of the longer appointments.
Yeah. I mean, many of you maybe know Stephanie through mm-hmm. Gateway, her work at Gateway.
Yep. Thank you. Any discussion? All right. You're not all in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 337, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a contract. The New York State Department of Health to participate in the childhood lead poisoning prevention program.
Move that.
Second.
Second. Any discussion? No? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Resolution 338, approving the execution of contract amendment for $14,308, closing the aggregate, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 with Zach Academy Incorporated. This is, oh, well, let's move. Discussion?
Okay, I'll move it.
Second.
Second. All right. This is to extend a term of agreement.
$14,000 to just extend it for a year.
Yep.
And they teach an initial training course for lead.
Yep.
Innovation.
All state funded, right?
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. Resolution 339, amending the 2021 budget to accept an increased funding for COLA adjustment. For eligible programs.
Sorry.
For the letter from OMH. Yep. Move. Laura.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 340, authorize the chair of the legislature to execute intermunicipal agreement for the preschool special education and related services program with Rondout Valley School District in the amount of $5,000.
Move that.
Second.
Any discussion? Any comments on this one, Laura?
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 341, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Department of Health for the Early Intervention Program. This is in the amount of $103,548. Move for discussion.
I'll move that.
I'll second.
All right, any discussion? This is over a 5-year term. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any questions?
It's all paid with state aid.
This is all state.
I think the first big bunch of them was all state or state and federal, I think.
Yeah, it's a special education grant for infants and families. Infants and families. What does that include?
Early intervention. It's 341.
This is the preschool. This is a preschool special education services.
So that's Rondout Valley. I don't know why she must have it wrong. This is early intervention program.
So this is for infants that are determined to have conditions or diagnoses that need to be further evaluated, and that's generally the purpose of it.
Makes sense. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 342. This is rescinding, what is this, local law? Is this 18 approving? No, this resolution. Which one?
342.
This is resolution number 18. Okay, that makes sense. 2021 approving the execution of contract for $171,391 with BMC Group. This provides transportation management services for its early intervention, its preschool programs.
Yes.
All right. Move for discussion?
I'll move it.
Second.
This was a contract that we had actually sent out for RFP, which was in a prior resolution approved here, and we included some additional options that were accidentally omitted from the revised scope and price. So this is to make those additions to that contract.
Tweaks it about $6,000. The prior contract was, I think, for $163, and this is bumping it to $171. So $8,000. It hadn't been executed yet, so that's why we're doing it.
What were those specific additions, though?
They were just additional time frames that might be required for transportation services, depending upon what the unique needs of some of the children are. Okay. Some of that comes down to their need for aids, and the aids actually following them from destination to destination, and sometimes or going from the destination into the location.
Okay.
So this was originally approved in February, and then before it was executed, you got the increase, and now
we're fixing it.
I understand.
Got it.
Normally this would be done through an amendment, but since the contract's not executed yet,
right,
it made sense.
And was that the only substantial difference? Okay.
I have a question about how many are serviced. When we get our reports, you know, even from Family Woodstock, they do list out, you know, how many folks are serviced, and that would go for the prior contracts, too.
I can provide you with that. I don't have that information.
I don't want you to create a document, though, if you don't have to. Would it be in your social service document at the end of the year?
Yeah, is it in our annual reports?
It would probably be.
Okay.
Yeah, I can get you that. So
we can pull it out.
Okay, perfect. All right, thank you.
Okay. All right, all in favor? Resolution 343, approving execution of contract amendment for $64,500 from Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster. Move for discussion.
I move that.
I second that.
And this is to expand the scope of services to include the operation of a cooling center. Now, is this cooling center located in the same place where the warming center was? Switching up for seasons?
That's the proposal. So what we had done was we reached out to Catholic Charities of Orange, Ulster, and Sullivan, and we asked them to come up with a proposal to see if they could accommodate a cooling center at the same location where we have the warming center. At this stage of the year, it doesn't appear that we're going to be proceeding to actually implement this. But we wanted to just have the option available. We did discuss with Emergency Operations Center some other locations that could be made available, and that's the direction that we're going in. But at this point in time, we thought we would at least have it as an available option with our contract with them.
Those are state too, right?
This wouldn't.
Yeah, 100%. This would not necessarily be. Yeah, the Code Blue plan and the inclusion of a warming center is 100% state reimbursed.
Okay.
So if you don't do this, would this money just not get spent? Right. Is that the idea?
To not
exactly.
To, okay, got it.
And we would, just getting the approval, we wouldn't execute this contract until it was probably necessary, correct? I mean, I'm assuming if you're saying we're not likely, we want to have the option to do this. If we get a string of 100 degree days and the other places aren't an option, then that we would like to use this space, but that would be kind of a last resort.
And anecdotally, to give this some context, the proposal that Catholic Charities arrived at was to be operating a cooling center for 3 consecutive months every day. And we actually ended up looking at that. And if we only did activations of 5 days per month for June, July, and August, the actual cost would be about $12,000. And we all know that based on what the temperatures are over the course of the summer, we might get a heat wave. So we were kind of arriving at trying to be prepared and map out what sort of costs would be confronted if we were going to have to activate a cooling center for 3, 4, 5 days in a row. The expectation is that we wouldn't be running it for 3 consecutive months every day.
So the term of the contract is for when?
The term...
It's until 9/30/22. Am I reading that right?
Correct.
So this ends a contract.
Okay, so this could potentially take care of next summer as well.
Yes, exactly.
And anything in the summer and next summer. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Just curious, you have to keep heat at a certain temperature, right? Is this regulated?
This is not yet. You're absolutely right. For the Code Blue plan on the activation of the warming center, if the temperature reaches 32 degrees or lower, the state hasn't arrived at a code red plan the temperature arrives at a high amount. So this was just Emergency Operations Center reaching out to the executive and DSS and us basically doing some creative contemplation over what our options could be. But there's no requirement. This is not required similar to a Code Blue plan.
So 2 summers ago, we had never had a cooling center in the county prior. And then 2 summers ago, it got to where it was hot and the county executive wanted to initiate a cooling center. We ended up using the lobby of this building. It was not night. It was like because there was a hot streak. It was well over 100, I think, for a day or two. And
It was on a weekend where this building wasn't being used. It was not the ideal situation. We brought in security. We basically let people sit in the DMV section to get out of the heat. Mm. We didn't do anything like that through COVID last year because we didn't really want to encourage people to congregate in a certain area. And frankly, I don't think the need was there. I don't remember it being. So this year when it started to show some temps, emergency management, again, contacted DSS and the exec's office and wanted to have a plan, so we formulated this. I think we would also potentially use, if we weren't using the Best Buy location to vaccinate and just needed to throw something together to have some people sit, which would be better than the lobby of this building, maybe we'd use Best Buy or something as well.
And this, I'm looking at the contract, it's generally referring to the heating center.
The warming.
The warming, but the cooling, there won't be any overnight. You would assume that it would just have daytime hours and then, okay.
Yeah, that First Amendment. So the contract itself and the Schedule A would just all have to do with the warming center. It's that Amendment 1 that would talk about specifically the cooling center.
Okay, perfect.
Can I suggest thinking about an alternate location than Best Buy for a cooling center? It just seems so impractical.
It's a little remote.
I mean, maybe somewhere in Midtown or someplace where people are actually walking on the streets that need it. That would be preferable.
UPAC. No one's hanging out at UPAC.
Right.
Yeah.
Hodge Center, something like that.
Right,
you know.
Yeah,
Best Buy was the site that we had control over.
Right. I'm just saying. You get on a cool bus to go to the cooling center, you know.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 345 for the execution of the
contract. 344?
Oh, yeah.
Finish my L.
Resolution 344 approving the execution of a contract amendment for $67,899 with the family of Woods.
I'll move it.
Second.
This is the first of 3 one-year options to extend the term of agreement for supervision treatment services for the juveniles program.
And this is state.
So are these all like 344, 345, and 346 are all the same program, just with different vendors?
They're not all the same programs. 344 is under the STSJT, Supervision and Treatment of Services for Juvenile Programs. So that would involve the population of children that are the subject of juvenile delinquent and PIMS proceedings. They're covered under the Raise the Age funding that the state provides, so it's 100%, and that's going to generally be for 16 and 17-year-olds. You want me to go on to 345?
No, we can get to that.
Okay.
Sorry.
So that was 344.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 345, approving the execution of a contract for $89,750 with James McGinnis and Associates. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
One second.
Yeah, this one's for software support to manage the preschool special education services program. Now, this is to help process Medicaid claims, right? Now, is this, this isn't for the software, this is to actually have people run the software. Right. Or is this for the software?
This is to install the software and to help us receive training on the software,
gotcha.
But our staff will be using the software to process the claims more efficiently.
Oh, wow. Yeah. A lot of money, right?
That's some software program, yeah.
$90,000. Includes the training, I guess.
And this is the state software? I mean, this is
right.
What the state uses.
Probably already, absolutely.
It's been privately designed, but it basically meets all the requirements to process the state claims.
And that's a full-time job for a physician's office. Do you have a dedicated person?
We have dedicated staff for this.
Okay. Yeah, put one wrong code in there and you don't get reimbursed.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, resolution 346, approving execution of contract amendment for $315,997 with Liberty Resources to exercise. Well, I'll move.
Move it. Second.
This exercise first of 3 1-year options and extend. Yeah, this was similar to the one that Abe was alluding to. It was at 345.
And again, this is all
state. I'm sorry, 344.
We're really pleased with this opportunity. Again, this services a population of vulnerable and at-risk youth. The multi-systemic therapy program, which is implemented by Liberty Resources and paid for 100% through the Raise the Age allocation. So again, it's vital services to basically adolescents. This does not necessarily require that it be a 16 or 17 year old who's the subject of a JD or PENS. These will be adolescents that come to our attention through diversion programs. And again, we're extremely pleased to be able to offer this type of programming. And we really feel like this is the kind of programming that when it's arrived at in time enough, and it impacts how a child is able to successfully continue to interact with their family and in the community, this is what helps us to be able to avoid having situations escalate.
This includes like substance abuse issues?
Any kind of underlying issues that might be identified. Mental health problems, educational deficits, behavioral problems, disabilities, substance abuse, all of those might be something that, you know, an adolescent is struggling with.
Can you just refresh me, what is multisystemic therapy? Is it?
It's family therapy.
Family therapy, right, okay.
Basically. Many systems, we're dealing with sometimes probation, law enforcement, the school system, healthcare providers, so it's trying to use all those systems effectively to be on the same page in terms of providing support and assistance to the child as well as the child's family.
And always working to keep them at home.
Exactly. That's a real key
and
component.
Is there a case manager who works to look at all those different systems and say, okay, you need this piece of this puzzle and this piece of this puzzle, and this is how we're going to move this young person through this?
This is in our coordinated children's services, so that's where the oversight and supervision is provided.
That's great. We need this for adults.
All in favor?
Aye.
I'm
joking, but I'm actually really quite serious.
No.
It's exactly what we need. We need somebody to come in and say, there's all these multiple systems that I can't work my way through. How do I get through all this stuff? So it's a complicated.
And we do keep hearing that.
We keep
hearing
someone
came in. Was
there
the
was
last
a Times
one?
Article.
She advocates for, yes.
About that.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Off the subject.
No, it is. It's on the subject, actually. Yeah. Now, resolution 347, approving the execution of a contract amendment. We did this one?
Well, should we? I was going to ask.
No.
These are the bus ones?
These are the bus ones.
Yeah, are these the same thing? Can we block them?
Good.
So 347,
348.
It's
the same. And 349.
Yeah, so I move to block 347, 348, and 349.
I'll second.
Okay. Discussion on the block. All right. On the block.
Aye.
And
I move
resolution.
Move to consider the blocked resolutions.
Yeah. Second.
I'll second that.
Discussion.
Did we? I feel like we approved this already.
No, there was another.
So there was another one.
Yeah, there was different. The one with the VMC one.
That was VMC.
Yeah.
Mm.
This is a mandatory state.
Got it. Okay,
yeah,
I just remember these names.
Yeah,
we've probably in prior months you've seen these contracts, just not these amendments.
Okay, got it.
Preschool transportation.
Got it. I just remember Bernie Bus and Roland V.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 months ago, maybe.
Yeah, I wasn't sure.
It's the good kind of block, not the bad kind of block.
Yeah,
we're blocking them forward somehow.
Yeah. I was like,
all
I was confused. I was like, we're blocking it. Who would block that?
I'm like, what tape does one take?
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Resolution 350, authorized the chair of the legislature to enter a lease agreement with Owen W. Station. This is for the Family and Child Advocacy Center. Move for discussion.
I move that.
Second.
Discussion.
Where is this?
This is on 51 Hurley Avenue, mm-hmm. and it's where the Family and Children Advocacy Center was relocated to.
Got it.
We had an opportunity earlier this year when the representative for the owner of the building brought to our attention that another tenant who was occupying about one quarter of the space on the second floor was vacating that area. And based on a variety of different dynamics, brought this to our attention. So in conversations with Mark and the county executive's office, we felt that it was reasonable to attempt to acquire that additional space. One of the primary concerns that we have with regard to the operation of the Family and Child Advocacy Center is ensuring the privacy and the confidentiality of the youth who receive services and the families that visit the facility. And that can be for purposes of interviews, receiving therapy, health examinations. And without being able to control what kind of tenant might occupy that additional space, we could be putting that privacy and confidentiality at risk. It also provides for us to have additional space available. Sometimes we're running multiple interviews with a variety of children and families, and to be able to keep them safely separated. And looking at what the offer was to be able to acquire the space, we felt that it was a wonderful opportunity.
Okay, thank you.
How often do you end up in those issues where you don't have enough space today?
You know, I'll just bring it up as an example. Recently, I think you're probably all aware that we had the tragic fatality on the Hudson there with Emily Pauly back in June. And on the day after that, in order to be able to interview Emily's mother and her surviving siblings, we had to reschedule numerous interviews that had already been scheduled because we didn't have the space on that particular day to accommodate everything. Now, you know, obviously that's not always going to happen. But anytime we're able to schedule interviews with families that include, you know, the children or caretakers or other individuals, you know, sometimes those interviews are scheduled after a lot of conversation and negotiation and persuasion. So it's always with some risk that we end up postponing a scheduled interview. Is that individual going to make him or herself available again at another time? So it can happen. And this would definitely give us the ability to have that additional space in the event that something like this unexpected happens.
I think one of the bigger issues, too, is just the privacy. And again, not being able to control the tenant that would share the floor.
And when we originally made the decision to occupy the space, there was a physician in that location who had practice catering to very elderly clients. So we contemplated whether there would be an issue with that. And for the brief period of time we were there with that tenant, you know, there were no issues. We were able to, you know, watch closely. But if some other person was to come in and occupy the space, you know, that could be put at risk.
This center was formerly over on O'Neill Street. We had leased space with there was one of
Red
the
Cross.
Local nonprofits, and we were actually contemplating purchasing the building. And when we did an environmental survey that was recommended, it came back that I don't remember there was an issue with the building, and so we had to quickly relocate them to this building, which has worked out well, but will be more ideal in this situation.
And we'll assume that this lease will be renewable after the 5 years, you'll hope.
That would be the hope.
Right. Yes. So this goes till 2025, right?
Right. Yes.
Seems like a good way to spend money spread out over that amount of time. It doesn't seem like a lot per year to get a good,
Given what the market is with regard to commercial property, I think it's an excellent opportunity to expand the space and address these other needs.
How's the landlord?
Excellent.
Oh, that's good.
He's been very cooperative.
Good. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Resolution 374, setting public hearing, closed. Let's see, local law number 6, local law, repealing law number 2 of 2013, and establishing the Ulster County School-Based Mental Health and Safety Act of 2021.
I'll move that.
I'll second.
Discussion?
So I'm not, it was just earlier today that I started reading the law.
Yeah.
Does anyone here have a good sense of the history? Because
I don't.
Sense there is some.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm not. This was something that, caught my eye at the end as I was running out today, and I was going to reach out to John and have an opportunity to, but yeah. Now, if you could enlighten.
I read the law and the legislative intent, and it all makes sense. What isn't clear to me is what gap is being closed,
mm-hmm.
And I don't know, Mark, if you've had a chance to review it yet.
I haven't, and I don't know a lot about the law that is being rescinded. For one, when you go to the link on the site, it's not the correct.
Right, that's why it's always helpful to have the sponsor, around.
When you try to click on Local Law 2 of 2013, it brings up Local Law 1 of 2013. So I haven't been able to, just getting back today, I haven't talked to Legislator Parody, and I don't really know, what local law he's rescinding.
Right, yeah, and that was the thing I was going to run it past the committee. I don't feel comfortable.
I agree.
Without
having
an opportunity to ask questions.
So I'll move to postpone this. Is that what we want to do?
Do you want to take no action?
Okay, we'll take no action. I rescind my move. Motion.
Okay.
Which didn't get a second anyway.
Failed. No.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if we could, if that could be sent to us, that'd be great. Just to have it ahead of time,
back. Absolutely.
Well, it's in our packet. The law and the legislative intent is in our packet already. I think what we need is we need John to explain, someone who understands the history, maybe Tracy, to explain what was going on in 2013 with the law. What gap is this closing? Because it sounds like the my first read of it was that the law is about enforcement. I don't really understand what is actually materially different about this legislation, or even what that initial legislation was intended to do. So I'm, I don't know that we're gonna. There's from my read of it.
Do you know who the author of the initial legislation was?
I'm going to say it was John as well, just on a hunch.
That'd be interesting to find out if we could know who that was.
Very good. We will take no action. We will move to Resolution 375. It's calling on state and federal representatives to restore maximum funding for New York State home and community-based servicing program. So move for discussion.
I'll move that.
Second.
Do you want to give some detail about that, Laura?
Yeah,
I found out
about the funds being reduced when I attended a function, and there were some individuals that worked directly with ARC, and they were lobbying hard to get that funding reinstated. Over the years, quite a bit of state funding has been eliminated, especially with mental health and disabilities and getting people into the workforce. You know, even here locally, I think they closed the printing shop that was used by multiple state and local, you know, municipalities and governments. So, and the two young people that were really promoting, and I mean, they were so motivated and well-spoken, they would like to come to our session, so you'll be able to hear it from them directly. But it was $400 billion, and now it's been reduced to $180, and that's a significant reduction.
I've heard a lot about that, too. People have reached out to me. There's a, there's like a CD Pass program. It's like a consumer-directed where people with disabilities get to, you know, hire their own caretakers, you know, and yeah, they can train them, and yeah, it can be like family members, close friends. I think as long as there's not a direct or legal obligation, and yeah, those monies have been drying up as well, and people really depend on that in order to live like a, you know, functional life. So yeah, that would definitely be something that would be advantageous.
And I did a quick research. I didn't see where, you know, Schumer's reacted or whomever, any of the elected officials who would be able to advocate, you know, and that it's been reinstated back up to the 400. So we'll move forward with it.
Yep. Definitely.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very good. Anything old? Anything new? Yep. Okay, look at that. Almost six on the dot. Very good. Cool. All right. Well, hearing no other business,
motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Cool. Thank you.
Good to see
you. Thank you very much.
It is nice to see everybody. Yeah, right. I forgot we had to sign these things. You didn't bring a